Hello, listener. Welcome to Switch It, the podcast that always packs a spare jumper. England's tour of India winds up in Dharamshala over the next week, with the expected conditions likely to remind them that there's no place like home. Can England relight the Baseball fire in the foothills of the Himalayas, or will it be India who put the icing on a 4-1 series win? There are peaks being scaled left, right and centre, with Johnny Bairstow and R. Ashwin both set to play their 100th tests, while James Anderson goes in 2 wickets away from becoming only the third man to 700 in the format. Throw in pride and World Test Championship points and there's plenty left to play for. To discuss whether England can get themselves up for a contest that will be played at 5,000 feet above sea level, I'm joined today by Andrew Miller and Vitushan Ihantaraja. Hello, both. We're at the back end of a long tour, Vish. How's the fresh air and mountain vistas working out for you?
Yeah, fine. It's quite nice actually being in a place like this for the final test. And actually, Ben Stokes made a point of saying this today, that it you know, he's been on India tours before, and you know, they do drag on, especially when you're losing. And you know, there can be a danger, or certainly England have fallen into this, of getting to the final test and just thinking about home before they've even got on the field for it, and the results are, you know, as they end up being, quite bad and make things a lot worse. So he's kind of warned against that, but he's also said that, you know, the fact that they're in a place like this, and you know, some of them will be meeting the Dalai Lama on Wednesday morning, kind of adds to a bit of intrigue, a bit of interest, and keeps them going a bit. But yeah, ultimately, you know, they want to win 3-2. They want to make it
morally
3-2. You're not getting me there. You are not getting me there. They want to get that second win on the board, and it'll be the first time that any team has done that since the England team that won here in 2012. The caveat being that, you know, England are one of the few teams that tend to regularly get 5 tests here. You know, Australia only got 4 this time last year, so it does mean they have more of an opportunity to win 2 games. But yeah, there's pride and a little bit more, really, because yeah, there's a big summer ahead and potentially changes afoot as well.
Well, World Test Championship points I've already mentioned. Perhaps after they've met the Dalai Lama, Miller, this can be reincarnated as a 3-2 series win. You've already been to nets with the camel. Must already have your eyes on the prize that is the English summer, by which, sticking with the theme, I mean 3 degrees and chucking it down. You
know? Well, we've been indoors so far, but just on the subject of Dalai Lama, surely it's the Dalai Lama meeting Brendan McCullum, the ultimate guru. This is really what it comes down to. It's spring is in the air. I had a good sighting of my kingfish this morning down in the marshes. He's busy nesting. The weather's starting to get warmer. It's all very splendid. So
although it feels a lot colder this week. There's a snow bomb incoming.
Well, it's there. Poor kingfisher. It's screwed. Never mind. We're getting there, aren't we? But it's weird. It's a funny time to have such a lengthy break in the series, isn't it? It almost feels like a completely one-off game now, because we had the end of series post-mortem almost last time out with England losing their chance to retain their unbeaten run in the Baseball era. But you know, in terms of what this means, it's a one-off game in a slightly unusual scenario on a pitch where I think the last game was played here, a Ranji Trophy game, was all 36 wickets were taken by seam. So albeit it's 4 weeks ago, it's going to be the same surface, so presumably some of the same attributes will come through. And in terms of, you know, England's mentality and how they approach cricket, they've gone into most of their games of this era genuinely professing the belief that they don't care about the outcome. And now, actually, the outcome doesn't actually matter so much because the series is already gone. So in terms of tapping into that mindset of let's just go and have fun, which was pretty much what Johnny Bairstow was talking about the other day ahead of his 100th test, it's actually quite a good demob happy sort of scenario for England to approach this game, in my opinion. It possibly gives them all the more chance to get back to what they were doing quite well previously in the early part of the series. After that, you know, I think a lot of people agree that it was a slightly tentative, slightly subdued performance to lose that fourth test, certainly the back end of it. And maybe a chance to just get back to what they've done quite well all this period and get on the front foot again.
Well, I'm hoping that plenty of sticking out the front dog and planting band pad together with the Dharamshala dibbly dobbly stuff in mind. Vish, England cancelled their first training session, I think, on Monday because of the weather. They've been out and about today. What are the early murmurings on conditions and team selection and so on?
Well, they didn't cancel on Monday. They had it cancelled for them, really, because the rain meant they couldn't train outside and India were using the indoor school for a photo shoot. So there was nowhere to train.
the murmurings... Stokes and a few others were filming themselves running up and down the mountain passes on Instagram.
Yeah, exactly. It was a bit rocky, that, wasn't it? But yeah, you know, not literally. They essentially they got out about and I suppose took in the sights a bit. Had a dip for some reason. It must have been freezing. But yeah, I suppose the early murmurings from Tuesday morning session is that kind of everyone's fit and ready to go again. Obviously with conditions and with what Miller was saying about the surface they're playing on and the very recent history with it, they're entertaining the idea of three seamers. They'll do what they have done throughout the series and make a call tomorrow after looking at the pitch after India have come and gone, really, just to see how it stacks up. Ben Stokes said it looks a belting deck, obviously meant for batting purposes, and they were surprised about how little grass is on it considering how much it's rained over the last week. And you imagine that extra seamer will come in for Shoaib Bashir, who, you know, Tom Hartley being the all-rounder of this team, it makes sense for him to stay, also the leading wicket-taker. Also, Bashir's got a cut on his right finger that he was getting tended to at Nets this morning. I don't think they've brought Moeen Ali's honey with them. So, he hasn't got that. But, you know, Stokes didn't seem to think it would be a problem come Thursday if Bashir was to get the nod. But yeah, he'd be the one likely to come out. And to be honest, it sounds like if they do go for three, it will be Jimmy, Mark Wood, who will be coming back in, having missed the fourth test, and Ollie Robinson, who will retain his place on the fourth test, which is interesting in itself, given, how poorly Robinson bowled, in part because he got that injury picked up when he was batting with Joe Root. And, you know, there was a sense that England is frustrated at his lack of durability, and you know that Stokes spoke quite well on him today, talking about how, you know, lesser men might not have taken the field when Robinson picked up his strain, and credited him for that, and says he obviously knows how good he is and how much hard work he's put in behind the scenes, and it almost felt like he was, you know, backing him ahead of selecting him tomorrow. He's going to announce his team the day before, as he has done throughout this series. It was quite a strong indication that if they are going to go with three seamers, that Robinson is going to be the man, and Gus Atkinson will miss out again.
Yes, I was going to say that means no debut for Gus Atkinson. Miller, who spent a long time in India this winter without playing too much. I think he's been pulled out of the IPL, hasn't he? Robinson is the sort of the matter at hand, I suppose, and a significant opportunity for him if he does get it. It sounds as if, I mean, the fitness issue that McCullum alluded to after the game in Ranchi, Robinson's obviously had a well-documented history of not being able to get on the park at the time when England need him. He did bowl and he did play in this game, but he wasn't used in the fourth innings. There's also been sort of the rumblings and murmurings around his podcast and the presence of his partner on tour and kind of the social media influencer side of things. Robinson kind of wants, from his perspective, to just get people talking about his cricket again, I suppose, doesn't he?
It would be a good thing, wouldn't it? I mean, it's so confusing. He's in danger of turning into, what, for want of a better word, a very unlikely bottler. I mean, it's a sweeping comment to make. But just given the chat that he's come out with, especially during the Ashes and the game with his podcast and giving it the big Yahoo at all times, and yet his performances have got increasingly timid, I suppose, as his career's gone on, and he's in danger of it. You know, the Matthew Hayden's infamous line about him bowling nude nuts, that's in danger of becoming his career epitaph if he doesn't get out of his tailspin. But on the flip side of that, you've got the fact that Ben Stokes, one of the most wholehearted competitors in Test history, frankly, given what we know about his desire to go bust a gut, is absolutely clearly in awe of what Robinson's potential is, which is quite something for someone to keep backing him and keep saying, you know what, I know how good this guy really can be. And let's not forget his averages still. It was about 22. It may have gone up to 23 after the last test. But either way, low 20s is incredibly good after 20 tests. And even when he's been at half cock, you know, through the Ashes in Australia, for instance, when, you know, he had his fitness problems, he was still getting wickets, still creating chances, still finding the edge. He did it when he was bowling 120 kph in the last test. The slips were too deep for the edge to carry, but nonetheless, he got the edge and was causing bother. So, you know, this strange dichotomy between the character and the competitor that England believe Robinson can be, and clearly Robinson himself believes, because, you know, I don't think a less confidence in his own ability would come out with the sort of chat that he has come out with all throughout his career. But at the same time, you think of all the chances he's had, and the, you know, going right back to the debacle on debut when his historic tweets came out, and the fact that he thought his career was ended there and then. And then, you know, you think of the ill-timed injury in the Caribbean after the public shaming about his fitness in the Ashes. He's had a lot of opportunities to prove that he is getting it together, and he hasn't yet put together that run of performances that backs up the sense that he does get it. So it's an important test for him. It does sound like, yeah, if Stokes believes he's worthy of another go, he will get another go. And his career record suggests he's worthy of another go, because he's incredibly good when he gets it right. But it's been too many consecutive wrong turns in recent times for him to get away with many more, in my opinion.
Certainly, one player who knows a bit about having those clouds over him and questions about his place in the team. But none of that on this occasion. Johnny Bairstow will play his 100th test match in Dharamshala. He's been written about a lot this week. He's spoken to the media. This is a significant moment for him. I mean, he is one of the sort of the most iconic players, I suppose, of this England era, when you take it all together. I mean, World Cup winner, a baseball totem. Vish, for whatever people think about him or write about him, I mean, it's clear how much this moment will mean for him and his career.
Yeah, without doubt. And, you know, I suppose there were various periods where he thought it wasn't going to happen. Obviously, notably when he was out of the team. And then moments where he thought, ooh, hold on, this guy could be here for as long as he wants, really. And I'm thinking back to, you know, that incredible 2016 year. And then, as you said, the baseball totem year of 2022, or the summer, rather, of 2022. And then we're kind of in this weird space now where, you know, we might be watching one of his last tests, given how, you know, there has been a broader sense that England are going to move forward. And, you know, in order to be a bit more ruthless on the field, they probably need to be a bit more ruthless with selection, given that Alex Lees is the only batter that they've ever really dropped. And I suppose maybe you can throw Ben Folkes in there last summer as well. But it is interesting, isn't it? Because he has done exceptionally well under Stokes by and large, and there was a real understanding from Stokes and McCullum of just how much this means to them. Now, it makes sense coming from Stokes, doesn't it? Because Stokes has known him for so long. He's played with and against him from age group level upwards. He's toured with him for many a year as well in both formats. And but, you know, someone like McCullum got to know him really during that first summer and kind of got him straight away, which is unique in Bairstow's career, really, because it feels like he's gone through various different England teams and various different coaches who've not quite got him. And, you know, I think there's a great McCullum line from last year, I think, that, you know, what Johnny Bairstow needs is an arm around the shoulder and a kick up the arse. And he's got that from this group. You know, his family are in town as well. His partner, his son, his mother Janet as well, obviously, and a lot's been written about her, and rightly so, as someone who's, you know, held the Bairstow family together since the passing of his father all those years ago. I think it's, you know, there's been a lot. You're right, there's been a lot written about Johnny Bairstow, and there's been a lot commented on Johnny Bairstow in reaction to those pieces about, you know, his average and this, that, and the other. And I suppose it's important to remember this is a guy who's batted from 3 to 9, who has had to assume various different roles, who was comfortable and then made to feel uncomfortable by other selections around him, which I understand that some people might look at and be like, well, you know, grow up, mate. This is international sport. But at the same time, it fundamentally is unsettling, whether you wear it well or not. And I don't know, maybe it's a generational thing. You know, I wrote about Johnny Bairstow a couple of days ago, and I came to the conclusion that, like, you know, you're right that the numbers aren't good, but you really did have to be there to experience it. And that might be going forward something you'd have to tell other generations or other people who aren't particularly au fait with Bairstow and his work, that no, but it really was fun. It really was, it was, you know, remarkable. His runs somehow felt a bit different to everyone else's runs. And you kind of have to accept that that sounds absurd, but that's the truth of the matter. And it's also nice that in this era of, you know, stat crunching and numbers and graphs and, you know, the way that, even in T20, a sport that's supposed, you know, that's supposed to be the fun version of this serious sport, that seems to be taken more seriously, that, you know, the onus on statistics and whatnot. But it's nice to know that someone like Bairstow, who just makes you feel things, still, you know, still has weight in this game of ours and still matters, I suppose.
The data nerds done to our sport. I mean, yeah, I think a very good piece by Vish, it sort of boiled it down to Bairstow being a sort of you had to be there cricketer. I mean, Miller, he sort of remains a bit of a test enigma. He's the 17th Englishman to get to this 100th test mark. He's got the lowest average for a specialist batter, although he's not really a specialist batter. He's played as a wicketkeeper for half that time. And of wicketkeepers who've got to 100 tests, I think he would have had the third most. I mean, there probably aren't loads of those, but only behind Ian Healy and Mark Boucher, number of dismissals. And yet he's only played 55 of his 100 tests with the gloves. I mean, unwrap the conundrum wrapped in a riddle that is J.M. Bairstow.
Well, I thought Vish's piece put it very well, actually. He's a classic case. It's the how, not the how many with Bairstow. I was actually down doing a talk at a school between tests. And as you do with kids age 8 to 13, so, you know, full of questions afterwards. And, you know, I probably should have been prepped better to think what they would ask me. One of the questions, the inevitable question, was who's your favourite cricketer? So by the time I bored them about Angus Fraser's stats, the follow-up question was obviously, who's your favourite cricketer now? And I thought, the first name, the only name that came to mind was Bairstow. I was like, I've got to say it's Johnny. I really, really love watching Johnny play, because I suppose in the same way that, you know, I grew up in the 1990s when England weren't very good, and I thought Vish touched on it quite well in his piece, in that the story of Bairstow has been the story of England getting better, essentially. He started at rock bottom with England's dressing room splintering in front of him and KP about to be ousted from the side and all the rest of it. And he went through the Ashes tour in 2013 when it completely detonated. And since then, he's sort of rebuilt, and England rebuilt in white ball cricket, which is an important part, a hugely important part of his story as well. The extent to which he sacrificed his test ambitions because he really, really, really wanted to be part of that white ball journey and forced his way into the side in a way that no one else did in that period. I mean, you think of the lock that Hales and Roy had on that opening partnership. Bairstow basically said, I'm not giving up until I've got that slot. And he got it and he kept it and he proved absolutely critical to England's hopes in that World Cup. So all along the way, the things that Bairstow has done has been purely passion driven. I suppose that is the thing that really resonates with someone like myself, who, as I say, grew up when England weren't very good, but I could recognise players who cared, like Angus Fraser, clearly. But, you know, you think about the moments that have mattered, and it's not always been the runs that Bairstow himself has scored. I think Vish mentioned his 36 at Headingley in Stokes's famous game, when actually it was Bairstow who launched the counterattack when England had, you know, I think Roos had been and gone for a decent 50, but Bairstow on that final morning was the guy who thought, right, we need to get a move on here. We need to start pressing the accelerator and get closer. And he did it bloody well. And then got out in the 30s, which has been the story of this winter as well. He's had a lot of really good starts. And, you know, you hark on about the Johnny's eyes. The number of times I've got some old colleagues who are in a WhatsApp group with, and you know, every time you see Bairstow play a cover drive within the first five balls, and Johnny's on today. Johnny, look at that. Johnny's eyes are in. He's on for a big one. He gives you that belief that irrespective of circumstance, Bairstow's going to do something here in a way that I don't think many other cricketers in his generation did. And if that hasn't reflected in his ultimate stats, it does reflect in the moments that stand out. Again, you know, the Ashes tours that he's been on have, broadly speaking, been a disaster. But you think of that Sydney test, the 100 he scored at Sydney last time out, emotional 100 in January, which obviously anniversary of his father's death, much as his Cape Town century was in 2016. The passion, the dedication, the belief that I'm going to transcend the circumstances here and put in a worldie. Not many players could replicate that sort of zero to hero acceleration that Bairstow has inconsistently produced throughout his career.
That sums it up, I think, pretty well. Certainly, being there at Trent Bridge in 2022, that's an innings that, I won't forget. And his response to how he did it, I think, was he'd had a coffee and a cheese and ham toasty at tea. So there you go. That's a sort of...
And as you say, I mentioned before, previously with Bairstow, the nobody has better articulated the Bazball mentality than he did after that innings. But basically he said, it's do or die, see ball, hit ball, him or me, I'm going to take him down before he takes me down. That was it in a nutshell. All the pontification about what Bazball actually means that you know, comes out in every analysis of it, every performance, that was what it was before it was even defined. That was what Bairstow thought it was. It's like, right, I'm just going to smack the ball because it's in my sights and I've got a job to do here before someone does a job on me.
Well, he's obviously had a bit of a tough time since then, certainly with that injury. I suspect there'll be plenty of people wishing him well over the next, 5 days once the test starts, that 100th test and the possibility that he might mark it in style. James Anderson, obviously, there's a big milestone coming up for him too. Vish, any sense that Sir Jimmy is relishing the thought of swinging out a couple of cheap ones early doors in Dharamshala and moving on past 700. I don't expect we'll get, you know, much in the way of Bairstow-esque explosion of emotion if and when he gets there. But we're business as usual for 41-year-old James Anderson.
You know what? I'm not sure that it will be a milestone that comes up with little emotion because of what happened last summer. I think we're in quite an interesting point with Jimmy where, for the first time, you know, with naturally with a bit of trepidation, given I think the first Jimmy's on his way out piece was written in 2014, 2015, I think. But it is clear just from, you know, the fact that this is a newer England team coming through, you know, even to the extent of Bairstow, really, thinking that, you know, there are younger players who ideally should be, you know, put in for experience ahead of the Ashes in a couple of years' time. But, you know, with Jimmy, the disconnect between the core of the team in terms of age profile is, is as big as it has been, really, and that's not just because he's getting older. But there's also a sense that, you know, he really grafted after the Ashes. Like, there was such a severe disappointment there, and not least when, you know, his opposite man, who was forever in his shadow, really, in Stuart Broad, got his ideal send-off. Now, I don't think Anderson's going to retire yet. I don't think he's going to get to 700 here and knock it on the head before he gets back home. But, you know, can you see him playing on beyond the summer? I personally can't. And because of that, this is a milestone that is going to mean a lot to him, I think. And I don't think he will hide that fact. And I think a lot of it will be governed by how badly he struggled last year compared to, you know, compared to previous summers. I think it is really interesting as well that, you know, Ben Stokes, when talking about Gus Atkinson today, and that, you know, he obviously incredibly talented, and, you know, while it might not happen this week, obviously has a future in Test cricket. He kind of talked up the value of him being around Anderson and the fact that he'd been able to pick his brains and stuff like that. And I think part of that is because Anderson, you know, Stokes didn't say this, but, and maybe I'm being a bit cheeky here, but I think there was a little sense of, because, you know, he's not going to be around for long, and Atkinson is one of the last lucky ones who'll be able to call upon that expertise and bowl with him in the minutes and this, that, and the other. So, you know, like, we're talking about it like it's a foregone conclusion that he's going to get to 700, but, geez, if you've got to create, you know, Jimmy conditions, I'd say they were a lot like this. and so, you know, it's, he'll get there, and, you know, it'll be an incredible time, and, or, you know, incredible moment for him, an incredible moment for English cricket, getting past, you know, getting to 700 full stop. But, you know, this is one to really savour, because, you know, let's be frank, 800 is not coming, 750 is probably not coming. So this is the last time that we'll really get to sit back and be like, geez, how good is Jimmy Anderson?
He might go past SK Warne, though, Miller.
He might. It was 708, isn't it? So that, yeah. that's certainly in his sights. So given everything, we assume that he'll have one last English summer to see off, and obviously West Indies and Sri Lanka in an English summer, that could be decent pickings for him, to put it mildly, to sign off with. So yeah, absolutely, 708 is in his sights, and Murali will remain just beyond another peak, I suspect. But what are we doing? We've tried writing Anderson off. I think, as Vish says, 2014-15 was probably the first time, but I remember vividly writing a piece when he got dropped at Edgbaston in 2012, when he and Broad were shuffled out for Tino Best's game, so that England could have a look at Graham Onions and the like, to see what the next cabs off the rank would
bring. Like.
Breslin, Finn and Onions, who were all very decent bowlers in their own right, but he's outlasted all of them at either end. So it's unbelievable. So yeah, he's far from finished. Although, you know, I did think he was much closer to being finished than he's proven to be after the Ashes, because that was, as Vish was alluding to there, just such an anomalously bad performance from Anderson in a way that couldn't be explained away by injury or inhospitable conditions. He just looked off the pace, which is something you could never really accuse him of at any previous stage of his career. And out here, that work clearly has paid off, because, you know, even though his returns have not been stellar, because, you know, it's been a spin dominated campaign, his every over has had a relevance, and he's led that attack magnificently, as he has done for 20 odd years.
Okay, we touched last week on the subject of Bazball 2.0. Vish, you mentioned that they need to evolve. How are they going to evolve this distinctive playing style? Starting at the top, the opening partnership, ironically, is perhaps the best functioning bit of the side. But what are the questions that Ben Stokes and Brendan McCullum might start answering over the next test match?
Well, I suppose that the things that they want to improve on, and the things that they've spoken about improving on, are getting into moments in games where it is, you know, going one way or the other and making better decisions. I think what's been interesting over the last couple of weeks, specifically since the series was lost, is they're a bit more forthcoming in what they wanted to improve. And you know, in the immediate aftermath of that defeat in Ranchi, Stoke said, you know, what does ruthlessness mean? And then the very next day, McCullum told us what ruthlessness meant. And to them, it means, you know, having previously not been able to get into a situation where, you know, you were in a position to grasp the game and, you know, snatch it away from your opponents, now they've just got to be better at snatching it away. McCullum referenced the Ashes last year and the mistakes they made during that and, you know, the opportunity they spurned to win it at various points. And here, you know, Ben Stokes said that England got into those moments, but in those moments, India's skill was much better and they've deserved to take the series. And we asked him, you know, so we asked him the question you've asked me. And he said, well, in the nets, really, it's not a mentality thing. It's not about fortitude of, I suppose, character. It's simply about skills. And when you bear that in mind, it's about refinement for certain players and ultimately upgrades for others. And I suppose, you know, we can perhaps throw Johnny Bairstow and Ben Folkes together in that, in terms of England have a situation where they would like a really dynamic keeper. They came to India where they needed the best keeper and they got him. But they made the choice on the dynamic keeper last year because of what Bairstow did in 2022. Now, they might just choose to go with Bairstow again this summer, but it feels like, as I mentioned before about, you know, looking further down the line, that they might, you know, go for a younger option, in whether that's, you know, however they want to split Ollie Robinson at Durham, James Rue at Somerset, or Jamie Smith at Surrey is down to them. But ultimately, they're the next three that they're going to look at. And I suppose from that point, they might look at the bowling as well. But ultimately, it feels like it's the batting that they're most, not dismayed by, but it's the batting where they feel like they've got the most potential that's still untapped right now.
Skills then, Miller, rather than a mentality. As Vish has mentioned, Ben Stokes, I want to say the famous folks quote really on this topic, which is, I'm not, as you say, Bazball. Is that going to be inscribed on his gravestone?
Yeah, poor chap. He does have a pretty luckless time of it. But then so have pretty much every gloveman's, and, you know, Jack Russell versus Alex Stewart or Bob Taylor versus Alan Knott. You know, it's not a new problem that's suddenly been brought about, any more than, you know, attacking cricket is new to Bazball. You know, others have done this before. It's not going to go away when this goes away. But just in terms of the dynamics that England are addressing in this 2.0, it's actually kind of interesting that, you know, when we were discussing the future and the sustainability of the approach, I kind of assumed that the Bazball vibe, the Bazball ethos or whatever it may be, would pretty much die with the generation that had brought it in. So, you know, Stokes, Root, Bairstow, Broad, Anderson. Broad's already gone. Stokes, Root and Bairstow have had, by their very high standards, incredibly quiet series, all three of them. And Anderson has led the line pretty well, but again, as we discussed, not got the rewards for it. So, funnily enough, the five core pillars, the five guys who had the existing status to be able to say, you know what, screw this, we're going to do this differently, follow us, have actually been pretty quiet. And it's been the kids who've actually set the agenda and have really run away with the ethos. Zach Crawley is, as Vish has said previously, he's the best player on the side now, which is extraordinary. And so, you know, that ethos has evolved. It's almost as though there has been a degree of passing of the baton in the course of the series. So Folkes, from my mind, is actually a bit of a red herring in this. He's not the issue. He's a very, very useful man to have as someone who will do a job within this team, but he's neither one of the senior pros nor one of the up and coming young bucks. I mean, Jamie Smith, for my money, is the obvious guy to be that two in one approach. You can, you know, maybe bat as high as six, or certainly be a counter-attacking Gil Christian seven. But he got Harry Brook to come back in. We've got Ben Duckett is flying in his role. Ollie Pope remains a bit of an enigma, but nonetheless, he produced one of the greatest innings ever seen in that first test, and that won't be forgotten. And certainly when he gets back into English conditions, you can be sure he will have more to say for himself. So it feels as though there is enough invested in the players they've got to be able to think, you know what, we can carry this on, even if this current generation is going to start dribbling over the other side in due course, which is actually goes against what I assumed would happen with this. I kind of assumed it would be an amazing moment. I think a bin fire was my prediction for what it would end up as. I'm not convinced it will be a bin fire now. But it may not look like quite the changing of the guard that we'd expected. I think you know, then it may be that this generation have a natural dropping off. Broad's gone already. You sense that Bairstow potentially won't go much beyond this 100th test, and Anderson not much beyond this summer. It feels like over the next couple of years, there will be a natural tailing off of this. Actually, you know, without over-egging their results, it's been a golden generation for England. Those five in particular have personified it. If in the course of that transition, Crawley and Duckett and Pope and Brooke in particular come through and carry on the lessons that have been had inculcated into them over these past 2 years, England will be in a very good place.
You sense that certainly Stokes will be around for a little bit longer as the goal, stated goal there is sort of an Ashes tour, taking the team to Australia. Root being sort of back to basics would help, I guess, Vish. Is there an eye on the World Test Championship? England are obviously down in eighth, and so the final in 2025 already looks quite a challenge to qualify for. But I mean, we talk about whether we judge Bazball and England on results or not, but you know, that one is currently quite damning.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's on their radar, because I don't think it's on anyone's radar until they win a lot of games in 2 years. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, you know, the only thing that would change if England were suddenly concerned about the World Test Championship is they'll bowl 90 overs in a day. That's the only thing that would change. I mean, that's never going to happen. Certainly not when they, when they move on into the rest of the year. I think I kind of want to go back to what Miller was saying, actually, about not just the generational shift, but the new way of approaching it. Because I think it's been something that the management have actively changed. You know, they've almost kind of tweaked course subtly during this series, because you know, it is the younger players who are really taking this forward, and I wonder if part of it was, you know, you kind of need that freedom for them to realise how good they are. You know, Zach Crawley and Ben Duckett, we've seen in previous England teams, and Ollie Pope, we've seen in previous England teams on the previous systems that they've not been anywhere as good as, you know, certainly in terms of the peaks that they've shown under McCullum and Stokes. And now that they realise just how good they are, this is probably the best time for, I suppose, a tweaking towards the defensive. Now, I would like a better word than defensive, but I suppose maybe being a bit more measured in those moments that we talked about earlier.
Right then. It's International Women's Day later this week, so no better time to point you in the direction of our sister podcast, ESPN Cricket Info Powerplay. The new episode will be in your feed this Wednesday and features an interview with Bangladesh captain Nigar Sultana Jotti, in which she discusses what it is like to be a female cricketer in her country and the brave support of her family. Almost time to wrap up here. England's men have one more fixture to fulfil this winter, and then there's a whole three and a bit weeks until the start of the county championship. Miller, between now and then, they've got the 100 draft as well. Can I interest you, get you excited in that?
Oh, you can try, but my wife's birthday is that day, so I think I'm not allowed to get excited, or else I'll be deep in the doo-doo. But yes, it's yet another sign.
The date is in your diary.
The date is very much in my diary for other reasons. But no, I mean, it's a bit like this time of year, we're always waiting for the first press release from a county announcing their county press day. I can't remember who won the race this year sometime in mid-February. But yeah, the 100 draft is another clear sign that the season is upon us, and the weather is warming up and the daffodils are singing and everyone's happy. And yeah, can't wait. It's English summer. What more do you want?
And Vish, you've got the ideal sort of warm up. I use that word loosely, but for Champo weather in April with your extra layers, and I can see a lovely fleece that you're wearing there.
Yeah, it's funny. I thought, like, you know, at training that, oh, you know, this is nice, you know, nice dress rehearsal for the start of the county championship, and I realised none of these players are involved in April or May usually. So what would they know about it? So, but yeah, no, I'm very much looking forward to getting back on the county grind. Yeah.
Yeah. And not talking about endlessly about baseball, although we will do this one more time after the test. Okay, that will do us for today. I think England could sign off their tour of India on a winning note in Dharamshala, but you wouldn't want to bet on it. Sorry, the series is almost over.
Oh, God.
It took a while.
We'll be back next week to wrap things up. Until then, my thanks. Very deep thanks to Miller and Vish for putting up with that. Please feel free to rate us on your preferred pod platform and keep up to date with all the latest on ESPNcricinfo.com.